Where are you?
I'm right here, Mr. Morgan.
Physically, where are you?
I'm in the pub that I work at.
Oh, have you been working this whole time?
No. I've had a Guinness or two.
I'm like 4 Tecates in. That's cool. Just checking.
Well, they're 20-ounce pints, so they get you there.
Yeah, right, right. No, but I'm like having a good time, man. We were just talking about the population of New York because I've never been.
This is bullshit. We took a 5-minute break. You guys are drinking and smoking weed and all this sort of stuff. And I was going to smoke a cigarette, and I was like, you know what? You know, this motherfucker made me feel so bad about a cigarette. And I was like, I'm not going to smoke it. And now you guys are drinking and high, and I'm sitting over here feeling bad about, fuck you. Fuck you both.
Is there something to that, Klaus? I mean, the fucking weed and alcohol, are they as bad as cigarettes?
There's my diatribe against the tobacco industry is one thing. Tobacco is a plant. It's there for us. Alcohol, you know, is part of alchemy. We created it because we liked it.
Nice.
Marijuana is a plant. I wanted to say something earlier about marijuana in Colorado, because I know in the late 90s, Colorado was always known for the extreme quality of their marijuana.
They were one of the first places to legalize or like decriminalize up to like an ounce or something, right? It was Denver.
Yeah, it's nuts up here. As soon as that happened, it was beneficial because it kept magazines alive here, and it kept newspapers alive to a certain degree, because all of a sudden there was dispensaries everywhere. It became like a whole new business.
The modern alchemy of marijuana, of hybridizing and hydroponics, and you know, they said that the average THC content of marijuana in the 60s was around 2 to 3%, and you know, the herb that's being sold today is generally between 15 and 20%. Is that correct?
It sure feels that way. I know within my lifetime, weed's gotten a lot stronger.
So I always connect this with, you know, the scene in The Shining where Jack Nicholson takes the axe to the door, correct?
Right.
It's an homage to an early film from the 20s that is supposed to illustrate the kind of madness that the drunk
Reefer
man.
Reefer madness?
No,
Reefer.
The
drunk man.
The drunk man.
Well, see, no, because in the...
Let me just finish this.
All right.
The madness of the drunk man is a byproduct of spirits. What are spirits? High-grain alcohol.
Right.
Okay. So the farmer used to drink beer from sunup to sundown, but the alcohol content of their brew was probably 2 to 3%. And they only drank it because it was probably safer than the water, and it tasted better. And they might have a buzz on all day, but they...
Wait. Fire water.
But then the abundance of grains that happened because of agriculture, the one thing that they knew that they could put those grains into was into alcohol, but a high grade, more intense brew that is called spirits. So when your old man got drunk from drinking 12 pints of 2 to 3% beer, you know, that's a jolly old soul. And he's telling some bullshit and making jokes, and maybe he falls down. But the guy who drinks a pint of whiskey, he blacks out and he wakes up, and the wife says, you know, you took an axe to the bathroom door. You almost killed us. That's what that's portraying, is this complete inability to recognize the potency of a substance because of whatever our blind spots happen to have been. Which I think is very directly related to the last 15 years with marijuana. Pot used to be a very social and very simple substance because it was 2 to 3 to 4% THC content. You had to smoke a lot of fucking joints to get to a really spaced out place. Now, there's a very famous speech by Grant Morrison at the Disinformation Conference.
Yeah.
Where he talks about contacting, contacting aliens when he was in, where the fuck was he? In Morocco or something like that?
Kathmandu or something.
Kathmandu. Yeah. And he says, I was on dope. And they say hashish. Well, hashish is basically the kind bud of the past. It was the oils of marijuana so that you could get a stronger smoke. It was the whiskey of weed for centuries. You could pilfer around with the plant, but if you really wanted to get out of your gourd and talk to aliens, you dabbled with hash. Well, I think that today, with the alchemy of weed, that the average herb that the unsuspecting customer smokes is probably as strong or stronger than the hashish that, you know, all the poets and all the mystics dabbled with for centuries. So
that then, since hash is stronger, our modern hash is going to get you talking to some fucking aliens.
Or beyond the aliens.
Look, motherfuckers, if fucking Mothman walks down my back stairs any minute, I'm going to blame it on you assholes, all right?
It's going to the Matrix is what it is. And that's a horrifying realization. When you scratch to the surface and you see the architecture of our reality.
Right, the men in black. The men in black. The fucking dudes who open doors and fucking the Adjustment Bureau. The fucking the shadow people who make everything happen in all synchronicities. It's the synchronicity command center or whatever homeboy said. It's like
John Lilly with his fucking dolphins, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's like these fucking it's the coincidence command center. Like, how the fuck are all the license plates saying 242? Like, how long can this go on when you're driving down the road for like 3 months straight and you're like 24, 42, 237? Like, what the fuck is going on at that point?
But exactly. It's like, why is, you know, the whole Jupiter 421 thing, right? Why is the original running time of 2001 2 hours and 41 minutes?
Right.
And Stanley Kubrick cut it by 19 minutes. So that it was 142 minutes.
And he said, like, he told Jack Nicholson, there's this, like, classic clip of Jack Nicholson saying, like, 421 people walked out when he first showed 2001 or whatever. And Jack Nicholson goes, and I think he counted them. You know what I'm saying?
There's a quote by Stanley Kubrick talking about when he was being interviewed. He's walking around a set, and they walked around some electrical generators. And there was a sign on the electrical generator that said, "Warning, danger, high voltage, 11,500 volts. And he turns to the interviewer and he says, 11,500 volts? That's so absurd. If that sign was in a movie, people wouldn't believe it. It should say 12,000 volts. Like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
What the fuck? He's in reality. The sign says what it is. And he's saying, if that was in a movie and people saw 11,500, they wouldn't believe it. So right there, he's telling you, I manipulate numbers to the uncanny realm, which is the realm of art, which is the one realm where the uncanny is most amplified. David Plait said that quote, and it's absolutely genius, that the one realm where the uncanny is center stage is in art and in film and in music. And that's why we're so we suck on Pop's tit every day, because it gives us that fix of the uncanny. It is our portal to the high weirdness. And
okay, all right, perfect. It's perfect segue. Stop there. I need to correct myself. I had said that the Total Recall hand was in the Pyramid of Peace in Astana, but it's actually in a different.
So there's two. There's two monolithic, the pyramid and this other place that correct. The golden hand is in.
So if you look up B-A-Y-T-E-R-E-K, I dropped the link here, but anyone listening, on Wikipedia, B-A-Y-T-E-R-E-K.
Bayteric.
Right. That's next to the, you know, it's right by the Pyramid of Peace. So there's a giant pyramid, and then there's this thing. This is what the handprint, the Total Recall handprint is in. Bear in mind, it's a sphere. The sphere is supposed to be an egg from the magic bird of happiness.
What?
Okay. So the monument is meant to embody a folktale about a mythical tree of life and a magic bird of happiness. The bird named Samruk has laid its egg in the crevice between two branches of a poplar tree. Cylindrical flag. So you have your egg sphere at the top of this thing, your magic bird of happiness, which is your total recall, right? You're asking stump. To make you happy. It says, the viewing platform, it features a gilded handprint of the first president of the Independent Republic of Kazakhstan. An accompanying plaque suggests that visitors place their own hand in the imprint and make a wish. When one does make a wish upon a star. When one does so, the Kazakh national anthem plays. In addition to the observation platform, the tower.
Just realized the importance of Arnold Schwarzenegger being in Batman.
Oh, right. The fucking Mr. Freeze. Now, check this out. Give me one second. Kazakhstan citizens jokingly refer to Beterek as Chupa Chups because of its similarity to the popular lollipop. So when you talk about sucking on a pop, you're sucking on Pop's teat. You're sucking the lollipop. This fucking lollipop is the Total Recall egg. Now, check this out. You said Arnold Schwarzenegger in Batman. He's Mr. Freeze, right? Well, the Batman that he's fighting against is that Val Kilmer? Or that's the other guy, George Clooney? Because Val Kilmer was in fucking...
Jesus, Clooney he's is ice, Batman too. Jesus.
Right, Clooney's a Batman. But wait, Val Kilmer is in Top Gun, and what's his name?
Oh, fucking...
Iceman!
He's the fucking Iceman.
He's the Iceman.
It's the fucking releasing of ice to make an atmosphere that's fucked up.
Well played.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
The kill.
Oh, that's right. The Kilmer Joker. What is it? The killing joke.
Oh, shit.
Kilmer. So, Val Kilmer fights Jim Carrey as the Riddler, right?
I never saw that fucking movie, and I can't believe Val Kilmer was fucking Batman. Is that true?
It doesn't make sense
to my brain that he was Batman.
Oh, the Total Recall Batman connection is right there.
What?
The relationship of the Montauk chair. Because the Montauk chair is put on JC2 in Batman Forever.
Jim Carrey gets in the Montauk chair in Eternal Sunshine, which is Total Recall.
And it's TV again, because the TV plays out in Jim Carrey over and over and over and over again with the Truman Show. So the TV, the Montauk chair, that's false memory.
Huh.
I apparently have a false memory.
You don't remember seeing Val Kilmer as Batman. You went to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, like whatever that was, like Luminera Industries or something, to have that movie erased from your mind.
There was an episode of Oprah with Jim Carrey.
Okay,
right.
Jim Carrey
right.
was shilling for the Truman Show. It hadn't been released, and Oprah's like, "Everybody, my girlfriends, you got to go out and see this movie. This is the greatest movie I ever saw." And she, I don't know how she fucking saw it. It was like a month before it came out. But Jim Carrey's in the chair getting interviewed, and all of a sudden he jumps out of his chair. He runs and puts his face into the camera and goes, "Illuminati, Illuminati," and does this dance and says this word, "Illuminati."
Yo, wait, check this shit out. Because the whole statement that there's never been a redheaded, well, no, he's not, he is the Joker though. He's a redheaded Riddler.
He is.
He's the redheaded Riddler, with the green, the Oz, bam. The money. Fuck, because the question mark is the money sign.
The question mark is the money sign. I don't get that one.
That's the question.
Jim Carrey, redheaded Riddler. If you free associate the question mark that is all over his suit, it's the money sign.
Oh,
the Green Wizard of Oz.
There's a guy who dresses up basically like the Riddler, only with dollar signs, who like he like hawks.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, what is that dude's name?
Matthew Lesko.
It's like
Matthew what? Yeah.
It's Matthew Lesko. Matthew Lesko. There's money everywhere.
Yeah,
Jim Carrey, because he's really exaggerated and fucking like
Matthew Lesko. Holy shit. So but he apparently does wear
Well, you see the Grinch connection, and you see the fucking Mass connection, and you see the Loki connection, and you see the Avengers in their 2012.
Yes. So he is essentially, the Riddler is essentially wearing dollar signs via Matthew Esco.
It's the Monopoly guy.
Yeah.
But it's
he is popularly known as that question mark guy for the Riddler-like suits that he wears in his television commercials, infomercials, interviews, and in his everyday life.
It's obvious. It's obvious. It's free associative.
Right, right, right.
Jim Carrey's the answer.
He's always been the answer.
So Jim Carrey says Illuminati on Oprah. There was also, when he was on In Living Color, he did some Illuminati thing where he was like, there was like a thing where there's a painting of there's a painting of like an eye in a pyramid, and he's like pretending to be like some art critic. And then he suddenly goes like, oh, is that Illuminati much? Or something like that. He makes like some Illuminati joke.
He does the whole Val Kilmer impression as well, right? I mean, he does the whole, during the MTV Music Award when he wins for the Truman Show, he comes out looking like Val Kilmer with peacock symbols all over him.
What? Doing the Jim Morrison thing.
Right, he's doing Jim Morrison. He's like, there's a lot of pussy in this room. You know, it's like, it's Dionysus. It's fucking totally meant to be Jim Carrey doing Val Morrison.
Val Morrison.
I don't even know anymore.
Van Morrison?
Van Morrison. No. Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer is Van Morrison.
He's Val Kilmer. Is Van...
I mean, wait.
He's John Carter, man.
So that's so weird. Is I actually watched, not too long ago, I watched Jim Carrey's first like interview with Johnny Carson, who's John Carter or Johnny Carson, and of course it's Here's Johnny. Like, I don't know why I watched it. I was like on YouTube and I was looking for something, and some related video was like Jim Carrey's first appearance on the Carson Show or something, and I was like, I must watch this. I don't know why. Like, I have no clue why I fucking watched it.
I would have watched that shit.
But it's just so weird. So you're connecting Jim Carrey to John Carter. It's Johnny Carson, or Here's Johnny, back to The Shining.
It's just JC, you know? It's just the eternal return with that shit.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree with that. So, okay, so you're talking about, just let's go back to this for a second. So he's on Oprah saying...
Yeah, okay, so I'm sitting in my apartment. I think, I want to say it's 1999. I don't even know when the Truman Show came out. But they talked about I had read Cosmic Trigger. I had been fully schooled in the Sirius Mystery. I had been fully schooled in the 23 Enigma. I mean, my email address is wklaus23 for a reason. I've had that since 1997, you know what I mean? So I'm sitting here watching the show, and they're talking about the plot of this movie, and I'm starting to freak out. They show this clip where the camera falls, and it says Sirius on it, 23, and I'm just like going, wait a second. I'm watching Oprah. I'm watching Jim Carrey, and this is straight Robert Anton Wilson and – all the occult information that I have been privy to, which is pretty much for me pre-internet. You know what I mean? There isn't that pipeline. If I wanted to find anything even remotely regarded, related to the occult, you found some small books at the bookstore. But actually, the one source that I had was Tower Records. So make your connections there. But in this Oprah interview, I'm getting hit with all this language and all this symbolism, and I'm just really having a hard time keeping it together. And then Carrie looks right in the camera and starts chanting Illuminati. And that moment where, literally the TV was talking to me, man. I mean, it was just...
So you're obsessed with Carrie too then? I mean, because I'm pretty obsessed with Carrie.
I'm just jealous that he had Jenny McCarthy for a while.
That's 23 too, because her name is JM or Mary Jane.
And you can actually bring this back to, you were talking before about autism and stuff.
Jim Carthy's son is autistic.
Right, and she wrote a book about different ways, like different my.
Well,
my
like niece. Fucking Carrey, an autistic whisperer.
And check it out, Jim Carrey and did this whole march where they wore these T-shirts like called "Green Your Vaccines," about like going green, but it was like taking mercury out of vaccines to help prevent autism. But he's wearing this green T-shirt that says "Green Your Vaccines." We all know Jim Carrey's the Green Man, so he's saying he wants to inject green into you. You know, he wants to make you green your vaccines. I don't know if that kind of makes sense.
No, I'm there.
Totally.
Okay. Yeah. It's like I want to put the green into you.
See, that's fucked up.
But I tried to find transcripts of that Oprah show. I'm trying to find video of that Oprah show, and it's just not anywhere on the internet. That I love this element of the internet is when you can't find something.
That's when it gets creepy. That's when you're like, but see, don't you see how the internet is the fucking web? It's the whole situation with it's Kali's web.
Yeah.
Like you said, it answers prayers. Huh.
Yeah. He's always listening, or she's always listening. Whatever you want to say about it. And Terrence McKenna was such a huge proponent, and to bring it back to before the break, he saw the internet and he salivated, I thought, of just, wow, this is physical. This is an emanation of physicality. This is something you can touch and actually interact with. We take this shit for granted, man. It's absurd how, the UFO has fucking landed, man, and has just, like a glove, slid into the parking spot. You know what I mean? It just, we don't even think, we wake up and we log on. We don't even log on. It's just on. 24 hours a day. I still remember when the television signal went off at night and you just said, all right, the world is going to sleep. This is magical fucking shit. But it still takes a certain perspective to appreciate it.
I think that's a true statement. That's what worries me about Sync, is like it's not accessible, but at the same time, that's like appropriate. Like it shouldn't be for everyone. And that's so fucked up because you get back into that whole fascist ideal or whatever. Like the ones who can understand the symbolism are the ones who are worthy of making the decisions at all. But
well, calculus isn't for everyone.
Yes, it's true.
I mean, that's the thing. I don't know if any of you had calculus in high school, but I had an AP calculus class. It was my senior year, and I got C's in it during the class time. When it came time to take the AP test, I got the highest score you could get. I think it was a 5 out of 5 or some shit like that. Calculus is a lot of work. Once you get the concept and you understand what it is, it's basically monkey work. You set this up, you plug this in, you go to the back of the book, you put that in, you plug it in. Once you get what there is to do, it's assembly line shit. So I got the average grade because I was like, I don't want to fucking work that hard. But then when the test came around, I was like, I'll show you what I know. It's a big difference there. But it always baffles me that I was placed in a position where, I always thought anyone can do this. It's assembly line monkey work once you know that it's assembly line monkey work. But apparently not everyone can do calculus. But I just think that they're thrown off by mythologies and prejudices and biases of what calculus might be, because they got so spooked by geometry or algebra.
Is this true for all of science?
It might be, man. I really don't think that...
So science is in direct contradiction to religion?
Are only certain people able to receive grace, and are only certain people able to comprehend formula? Is that two sides of the same coin, and that divides us? And that's how, you know, that's why we're
Does it become random selection up until the point where somebody can all of a sudden control the random? Do you know, this is like the whole fucking aspect of evolution, the fact that we want to get on top of synchronicity.
Okay.
That we want to become the fucking, the one who does instead of just like one of the doers. is that too fucking?
No. I mean, but I think at a certain point, if you get deep enough into this, you relinquish control. You have to relinquish control. That's just one of the gates, in my opinion. I think Crowley calls it lust of result. When you go into a operation of whatever it is, if you want something to happen, they will make sure that it doesn't happen. If you go into an operation with a lust of result, well, because you are the observer and you are the one with lust, you will derail what you wish to happen. It'll manifest itself in a very disturbing way. I think that movie by Tarkovsky called Stalker is a perfect illustration of that concept. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have not.
You gotta fucking check it out. It's just a long and slow meditation on if you were given the ability to have everything you ever wanted, and it's all about Crowley's true will. Most people don't really know what they really want. But if you were put in a position that would guarantee you to give you what you really, really wanted, most people would be horrified at what that actually was. I mean, that's the whole shadow work. Your shadow is just as real as your physicality. It's just as much of a deciding point into where you want to go. And if you're blind to that shadow will, you know, just like Daffy Duck in the dripping faucet that has a mind of its own, you know, it will torture you. Stalker, Tarkovsky, brilliant. He did Solaris, which is another brilliant film. And the Soderbergh remake with Clooney is fantastic if you haven't seen it. Because that's basically the same concept. You know, you go up to the space station and there's this alien intelligence and it's tapping into your unconscious and it's resurrecting the ghosts from your past. And when it happens...
See, Strieber called his female the Spider-Woman as well. This alien female who fucks the shit out of him like he's never been fucked before.
What's this?
Whitley?
Whitley Strieber.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was getting alien banged.
Yeah, there's very sexual connotations to Strieber shit.
Really?
Yes.
It's basically a succubus, right?
Right. But so is Kali, if you get it. Yeah. Kali is just a succubus because Shiva is on his back.
Exactly, yeah.
This Jim Carrey jokes about the Illuminati clip is so fucking massively important. I can't believe I've never seen it before.
The one I just sent you?
Yeah, because this shows him, because in the number 23, he's in a coffee house in one scene, and the all-seeing eye is behind him on the window. There's too many fucking Robert Anton Wilson fucking syncs with Carrey for how old he is. I mean, from the fucking beginning of his career, this shit has been embedded in there.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting, just to throw it in, is that he spray paints the eye in the pyramid green. So you have, again, Carrey as the green man. He's, like, greening the pyramid. But then what is he ultimately making it? By turning it green, it's like the dollar bill.
I like that. That's good.
Because if you look, it actually, what he's painting, that looks almost like the Colorado flag, right? It's like this red V around gold.
Yeah, it's got the eye on it, and it's got the little bundle of fucking sticks that's symbolic through Freemasonry or whatever the fuck. And yeah, it's a very highly symbolic sign. So is the flag, and so is the fucking, of course, the DIA airport, CIA, LSD, fucking whatever. LBJ, blown away. What else do I have to say? I don't know. What the fuck?
Did you know that I've been thinking about that song? I don't know why that song has been stuck in my head for like the last
month. Is that We Didn't Start the Fire?
Yeah.
So it's the fucking the Olympic flame. We didn't start. It's always burning since the world been turning. And see, somewhere Mark LeClaire is rolling over in his grave, going fucking Valis loop, Valis loop, Valis loop.
Well, what do you, hey, Will Morgan? What do you think about the Valis loop?
It's a very valid statement.
It is.
It's a very valid statement. It would make sense. But see, the thing that pisses me off is it's almost fucking glorious in a way, and fucking LeClaire keeps trying to say it's shit, it's a world of shit, and perhaps it is, I don't know. But I see all of this stuff that's going on as like a fucking product of human evolution, which means that there's not only a 10, there is an 11. Like a spinal tap right into your fucking cerebral cortex.
Fuck yeah.
There's got to be a turning up. There's got to, I don't know, man. The fucking, the hypeness of the fucking, I don't know, man. It's just sad. Like, you don't want to think about situations like you being... This is the thing. It's like, in your life, you're one individual. You're Will Morgan or who the fuck ever. And then you die. And then you're someone else. And then you're someone else. And then you're someone else. And then you're someone...
Are
and
you?
You're
think
everybody.
So?
I think that you're everybody. All that's ever been. That's like the fucking glorious thing. That's the true Valis loop. The true Valis loop would be that you're not stuck in the same cycle. You're stuck in the cycle of being everybody over and over and over and over again. That means it all fucking connects. Do you know what I mean? That's like the true Matrix. That's like the fucking true... I mean, see...
It's the Truman Show.
It's the true man.
Oh, that's kindergarten. True man. That's kindergarten.
It's true man.
No, it's kindergarten.
Kindergarten cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Absolutely.
That's
junior shit, dog. That's junior shit.
Oh, back to the pregnancy.
Yeah, young boy.
I really think that the Truman Show is the kindergarten realization. For me, it just... It never materialized into any massive eureka. It was more of a foundation. It's a mode of thinking that was.
See, that's the secret to all of Carrie's shit, though. It is all so basic and simple.
Yes.
That's what's the key to it. Like fucking Carrie initiated me into here because I saw a Wilner video. If I had seen any other Wilner video, I probably would not have been interested. But his whole Montauk Carey Green Man is so fucking universally 2012. I guess that's the secret right there. Is that what we're dealing with? The fucking end of history is the NWO, or the New World Order, or the fucking return of the loop. If we are in a loop, like what happens in Divine Invasion with Philip K. Dick, because he realizes he's just a fucking person sitting in a fucking encased capsule somewhere floating, listening to music that's not really there. Do you know what I'm saying? So is this some kind of video game that Sirius is playing? I mean, is that what this is?
It's all and everything, man. People, does anyone read Gurdjieff?
I've never read Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff keeps coming up because of Beelzebub and his stories to his sons or whatever. It keeps coming up, and I know that there's tons of Sirius connections, but
there's a great. It's probably fake. Story about Gurdjieff meeting Crowley, and they met for a minute. And I can't tell you the details. You'll have to search it out yourself. But it's a classic. Whoever invented it, well done, my friend. Gurdjieff, there's something about the way he spins this web that is utterly unique. I'm a huge fan. And I suggest to throw a little dash of Gurdjieff in your day.
So what do you think? What do you think, Klaus? Where are we headed? What is your opinion on Valis loop? Because in all actuality, I've only heard Mark's ideas of this. I want to know where you're coming from. We're going to get to the bottom of this. What's the difference between the Kubrick Transformer and what Mark LeClaire is trying to do.
Mark LeClaire is me like 10 years in the future.
Okay.
He's like my future self. He is a different path in the time stream. So I know, and we, you know, arguments are fun for everybody. And but I feel like I know, we think the same thought. We really fucking do. We shared the same experience. The difference being that he took action on it and I didn't take action on it. Together, when we merged our thoughts, I came in as a student, he came in as a teacher. I almost feel like I'm exiting the teacher and he might exit the student. And I don't structure that from any sort of position of superiority. I structure that from a position of balance. For me, the Kubrick Transformer.
Can I ask what the action was? Just to back that up a second, can I ask what the action was?
I don't think Mark would have any problem with me. He might have an opinion on how I retell it, but essentially, Mark had an experience with an external voice that told him the answer to the solution was to kill himself, and he attempted to do so.
He told this on 42 minutes.
Yes, he told this on 42 minutes. So this is.
But you received the same message.
I guess I'm in the spotlight and in the water, right?
You better say something, motherfucker.
I heard the calling.
To kill yourself, the same as or no?
I heard the calling. I heard the message. I heard a certain. I'll put it this way. A mathematical solution to the problem. That was offered to me as a mathematical solution to the problem. But it was not in a physical action. It was in a cognitive action.
Wait.
Okay. It was not to physically harm myself. It was a cognitive decision. You can debate it. You can pick it apart.
Is it Hal's decision?
No, it's I'll say this. It was a cognitive choice that was presented to me, and when I decided my answer,
okay,
I decided it from a very strict Catholic upbringing. I interpreted it in a Catholic way. If you understand what Catholic is, it's universal. That's Catholicism meant universal. It was a universal religion. So I choose to take a very strict interpretation of the language. And I'm Irish. So we're talking, you're talking batshit crazy universalism. Yeah. You're talking just whacked out universalism. And I was given the choice to say, and I'll boil it down to this, and we'll leave it at that. Walk into the light or not. And because of my Catholic nature, I recognized what the light was. Because of my Irish nature, I said, so that's what the light is. Okay, so that's what's waiting for me. And I chose that in the position I was in, it wasn't the time. And the Irish basically beat themselves up for that decision for the rest of their lives.
See, Irish makes me
think. Does that make any sense that, like, I reached, and this is.
But the Irish are the green men. The sacrificial lamb.
Well, I've had many people. I've had many people comment on, actually I haven't. I very rarely speak about the experience, but it was lysergically driven.
Was Streber again? Held against your will to kill yourself, to take the scalpel underneath the knife?
It was a choice. It was a choice to be absorbed into the whole, into the light, into the light.
I had a. Can I just tell you?
And I'll finish it with this. My systems, my biological systems, shut down. My heart stopped beating, and it was a yes or no situation. If I said yes, I would have died.
Yeah.
But I was given the grace of vision, and I looked upon my situation. I said, this is not the time. This is not the place. This is inevitable, and this is where I'm going. And I can spend the rest of my life knowing whenever it gets that bad again, I'll know. I will endure into the end. That's the model that Crowley took. I will endure into the end. But I couldn't take that motto until I was given that Doubting Thomas hand into the wound. That's how I chose to interpret it. And Mark, if you listen to this, feel free to, you know, tell me I misrepresented you. I'm not trying to misrepresent the things that you've shared, because it's difficult to share shit like that. But, you know, that's one pole to my extreme spiritual kind of awakening. And so when I come into when I found writers like, or artists or creators, people who put things out there, it's things that resonate with me. It's because they say, oh wow, these people have seen this too. You know what I mean? It's not wish fulfillment. It's out of a very desperate longing for anything out there to make sense of something that makes no sense. So, and I know both of you can relate to it in your own way.
Yeah. And you said lysergically driven is what you said?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gotcha. It was funny when you were talking about hash before. I had a point where I accidentally took what was probably an overdose of hash. And I was kept thinking I'm like, was basically a step into the light type thing of I'm going to die. And my wife was sitting next to me and I was like, I kept thinking, oh, if I do this, I'm probably going to actually die. And I'm like, is this an ego? It's like, that's not ego death. That's death. I think that's death. I probably don't want to do that. That would be really fucked up if I just died next to her. And I'm like sitting there like having this sort of like back and forth of like, what? If I keep going forward, that's where I go. And it's like, no, I'm not going to do that right now.
Well, it's that whole sense of it becomes patently clear.
Yeah.
That this is happening.
Yes, yes.
I mean, this is not, oh, it seems like. This is happening. And so the weirdness, this is the weirdness of it. And that ultimately it might be egoically driven, because it's like the moment said to me, it's okay. You can fall into the arms of the light and it's okay. But as I, you know, that the words that haunt me are don't look back. I looked back and I saw my friends. I was at a rave in the west side of Chicago in an abandoned building. Yeah. And my three best friends were there. And I was like, but I'm going to leave them with the responsibility of carrying my dead body answering to my parents what happened. And I'm going to initiate a circus of consequences that if I trust the source that time doesn't really exist, that this place, I mean, I'm telling you, when it's there, but I could avoid a very complicated, chaotic, and very twisted reality. And I chose, I had enough faith that this wasn't like my only chance. It was sort of like, this is the inevitable. So the inevitable is a gratuitous grace.
The moment you knew you were responsible for your reality.
Well, I had a choice. It's really about a choice. And I said, I choose a universe where people that I know don't have to try to grapple with what this means. Because in that moment, I had no faith that they would know what this means. I had no faith that they said, oh, what happened here simply was a man achieved enlightenment and went up into the arms of God. And this is a beautiful thing. And we'll bury him. And this is actually a really great thing.
Can I tell you, I mean, so this was a conversation we were having this week, was about this idea of what was essentially a leap of faith. And Steve was talking about this one guy who he's announced that he is going to jump off this like cliff in, I think, like in Sedona, Arizona or something, on December 21st at like 11:11. He's going to jump off this cliff, and he believes he's going, like, a portal's going to open up, and he's going to like ascend into this other realm. And we were talking about, it's like, there's, I guess, a possibility that he's right. He's going to go somewhere, but for everyone else standing around, it's just going to look like a fucking splat. And everyone's going to feel like, oh my God, we just watched this guy die. Well, what's essentially happening? Yeah, he's going to transcend the physical, all right, but it's not like his...
How much does this have to do with human sacrifice on 2012? And is this whole thing with the Aurora shootings just a representation of... Does this all have to do with the sacrifice of human life?
I don't know if sacrifice is the word. I mean, I guess, you know, the idea of someone else choosing for you, but in that moment... So I don't know.
Well,
you see
the relationship of the 2012 and the whole relationship of the fucking Galactic Center and the cutting off of the heads of the Olympic event at the Mayan whatevers. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
And then the whole idea of 2012 and the Olympics that are like we are on the cusp of.
Okay, think of it this way. So here, like, this was how I was connecting it, was that Mitt Romney, for, you know, whatever douchebag little thing he is, little blip on the radar, but the sink is important. He's connected to obviously the election. So we have Mitt Romney's Bane Capital, and then you have, of course, Bane versus Batman. This joke has been made a number of times that Obama is the Dark Knight, and he's going up against Bane. And Mitt Romney's connected to Bain Capital. But there's also, at the same time as we have the 2012 election, we have the 2012 Olympics. Now, Mitt Romney is famous for, quote-unquote, saving the Salt Lake City Olympics. So he has this whole Olympic connection. And apparently this, while I was gone, I saw some headline that he's in England now and was talking to them about the Olympics and how he had experience with the Olympics and blah, blah, blah. So you have Mitt Romney there with this whole Olympic shit. So ultimately, I knew, hey, wait a second, there's some weird sync here between the Olympics and this Batman movie. Then you have the Batman trailer shows a explosion at a sporting event. It's like a football game or something. But so ultimately, what I heard is that that's the center point of the movie.
Yes.
The biggest explosion.
Well, do you know that the one skybox that gets bombed out is the mayor of the city, which is played by the actor Nestor something, who played Richard Alpert on Lost, right? So
okay.
I don't know how that fucking figures in.
Ron Doss?
Well, exactly. But the number that is underneath the box seat that gets blown up is 322, which
what?
Is the number associated with Skull and Bones,
yeah. Right.
Which is associated with George Bush,
right.
Who is the most visible political figure who is always in an important seat at athletic events, just like George Bush.
That's fucked up.
I mean, it's just, it's almost as like Nolan's just like, here you go, fuckers, eat it up.
Well, that was what I was saying with the Olympics, because the Olympics, the official song of the, this is the fucking conspiracy Olympics, okay? It's like everyone's got a theory. They put giant fucking illuminated eye lights around the fucking Olympic arena. It's like they're like, yeah, fuck you. Here's every conspiracy theory you could think of. We're shoving it in this motherfucker. Here's our logo spelled Zion. We got a fucking illuminated eye in a pyramid. And then The official song of the London Olympics is by Muse. Muse, who sings songs about Ruled by Secrecy and MK Ultra, and they like, you know, Project Bluebeam. It's the fucking conspiracy band is doing the official song of the conspiracy Olympics. I feel like it's a mind fuck. They're like, yeah, here you go. Try this one. Make some sense of this, asshole.
And nothing will fucking happen, and you'll all look like a bunch of assholes. Or...
Right, or is it plain sight? Is it all just like, yeah, we're going to throw it all out there, and it's like, we're going to throw it all out there, and you're still not going to be able to convince anyone. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know?
No. Yeah, I agree with you, man. We are an extreme minority.
Yeah.
It's just an extreme fucking minority. And I don't think that they hate us. I think they almost want to delight us. I don't think that I just don't think it ends in blood and shit, even though we're surrounded by it. But yeah, tell that to the poor kid whose fucking dad gets blown to bits right in front of him. I mean, it's the horror Olympics, you know? Fucking Danny Boyle, his breakthrough movie was Trainspotting, about heroin addicts. And then fucking 20 years later, he's producing the opening ceremonies for the Olympics. I mean, you've got Coca-Cola and McDonald's sponsoring the Olympics. How the fuck do you connect corn syrup, fat, and salt to athletic ability in any way?
Well, easy, by connecting it to heroin.
Well, there you go. Get on board, son. It's just... destructive.
Trainspotting. Get on board.
Oh, what was that fucking famous like speech from Trainspotting? And it ends with like choose
life. Yeah, like choose a job, choose a girlfriend.
All I fucking remember is the dead goddamn baby.
Wait. But Bill, your experience. Choose life.
Yeah. Life. Well, like last week when we did Always Record with LeClaire. And he broke down Crowley, and he's like, love is life. He's like, get that shit out of your head, what romantic love is sold in America. He's like, life is the law, life under will. And what life under will, it's the most simplest translation. It seemingly is irrelevant, but it really snapped it into place for me. This aeon is choosing life. We choose life. We don't choose the easy way out. We don't choose to leave into the 72 virgins and orange and hashish infested gardens of the afterlife. We say, you know what? Fuck. I can't fuck over my friends and my family. I'll fucking choose life. Because I know if that's what it's all about, I'm going to get there anyways. I'll endure into the end. You know? But life under will is, there are times when life needs to take a back seat. I mean, sacrifice is a fucking concept that, how do you teach a human being sacrifice? It doesn't make any mathematical sense. It takes a fourth dimensional kind of perspective to see around that many corners to say, wait a second, if I fucking sacrifice my enjoyment right here for 5 years, it's going to turn out to be beneficial for everybody in six? I mean, that takes fourth dimensional insight, and no one can teach that, or at least nobody knows how to.
Well, so, you know, you're using, I think you guys are both using different definitions for sacrifice, or is it the same thing? When you're talking about sacrifice, like, sacrifice your personal pleasure now to have something in the future, and Will seems to be talking about human where someone else says
that's the whole illusion of Christ, though, isn't it? The whole.
But that's the old aeon. That is the aeon that we are leaving. That is the crust. That is the karmic skin that our snake is shedding. You know.
My game is slow like Han Solo. It took that bitch 3 movies to get that Jedi ho. You know,
that's what I was about to say. But
No shit, I was thinking that too. No, but okay, so like in Golden Bough, in the Golden Bough, Fraser makes the point that, you know, the it used to be that the kings were killed for the fertility of the tribe. The king died so that the tribe could continue. And then at some point, the kings decided, fuck this, I'm not dying. And he would kill his, like, vizier or his, like, you know, senator or whatever, you know, whatever the underling was in place of him. So it's like, oh, it's kind of like killing me. You kill my general, and that's good enough to appease the spirit of things. It's like basically the human sacrifice that I think Will is talking about is ultimately saying, I'm not going to fucking sacrifice, but I know sacrifice is necessary, so we'll kill a few other people, and then hopefully that's good enough. If the beast needs to be fed, I'd rather throw 12 people in front of the bus so I can keep walking. That's the old school sacrifice. I mean, that's the...
Absolutely. I mean, if you ever were privileged enough to find yourself in the position of king... Well, you are in the center of, God damn it. I mean, you're in the center. And there's no ego. You just.
Pull up, Goose.
you just appreciate it that you got the green jacket. You won the Masters. You're Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, y'all. Look at me. I won by 10 strokes. You can't fuck with me. They don't even allow blacks into this golf club, and I won the Masters. That's who I am, bitch.
That's fucked up. That's cool, though.
You're wearing your jacket. You're the Tiger. You overtook the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus. So draw them connections. It's all about golf, really, at the end of the day.
The man in green or the man on the green?
Yeah, right?
All right, so check this out. I can pull it up, but Tiger Woods, right? We're talking about the whole fucking Fraser Golden Bough, if I could pull this shit up. There's this thing where I found this quote, and it is so exact. So fucking exact.
Be careful now, because I love me some Tiger Woods.
All right. I'm pulling it up. I got it here. You just got to give me 1 second. But basically, Tiger Woods, when he got into that car accident? You know, his famous sort of like,
Yeah, the downfall, the beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end. For him, the beginning of the end was this car crash. And basically, he hit, I'm pretty sure it's an elm tree. And yep. I'm reading this fucking thing from Golden Bough where he's talking about like, and the elm tree signifies the downfall, and it's like it just is. Oh yeah. So it's not elm because elm is JFK. So that's why I'm saying elm. It might be oak. Hold on a second. Let's see. Tiger Woods. I have it in my notes here. Tiger Woods. Okay. Here we go. Tiger Woods. Who was 33 years old at the time. Remember, he had his home in Jupiter, his Jupiter home. Okay.
Right. So, Jupiter
Island.
Wait a
second. Wait. 33 years old in Jupiter?
Jupiter.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Get the fuck out of here.
Okay.
See, this island concept, too. I like this island concept in Truman Show.
Yeah, it's an oak tree. Yeah, all right. It's an oak tree. So this is an article from the Hollywood, like Hollywood gossip thing. It says the infamous oak tree that Tiger Woods drove into that fateful night has met a similar fate to that of his golf career. It's gone down hard. It was Thanksgiving night in November 2009, when Woods hopped up on painkillers and reportedly fleeing Ellen Nordgren, hopped in his Escalade and plowed into the tree, which sat in his neighbor's yard. Well, new neighbors moved in recently and tore the thing down. A new tree will be planted soon. For now, though, there's just a portable John sitting there, allowing workmen to relieve themselves on the very spot where Tiger Woods' career went down the toilet. Downright poetic. Now, here's Golden Bough. The old Prussians acknowledge as their supreme lord a ruler who governed them in the name of the gods, who was known as God's Mouth. When he felt himself weak and ill, if he wished to leave a good name behind him, he had a great heap made of thorn bushes and straw, on which he mounted and delivered a long sermon to the people, exhorting them to serve the gods and promising to go to the gods and speak for the people. Then he took some of the perpetual fire which burned in front of the holy oak tree, and lighting the pile with it, burned himself to death. So he sacrificed himself on the oak tree.
Wicker Man.
Oh, totally, yeah.
So with all this fire and Nick Cage, too.
Check this out. Nick, you said Nick Cage. I don't know what movie I was looked at a few IMDb's, but there's, is it Gangster Squad or Total Recall? So this movie here you go. Check this out. This movie, Gangster Squad, you know what I'm talking about? Where they, this like the quote unquote predictive programming.
It's Emma Stone, the chick from Spider-Man, and she's in it with Ryan Gosling, who is Mother Goose. Now, Ryan Gosling is Mother Goose. I get it now. Ryan Gosling is Mother Goose.
Okay, now. Emma, so basically Gangster Squad, the trailer for Gangster Squad has people going in and shooting up a movie theater.
Right.
So now they've pulled this from the thing. Emma Stone, as you said, is the Gwen Stacy. She plays in this movie with the shooting up the movie theater. She plays Grace Faraday. Well, you mentioned Nicolas Cage. You know what a Faraday cage is?
Ooh. But see, the Faraday cage is used extensively in Nicolas Cage's Sorcerer's Apprentice. They make a direct connotation between Nikola Tesla and the whole Gandalf wizard. Oh, the wizard, the sexual energy.
The Wizard of Oz?
The Lizard of Oz. It all has to do with sexual energy. I get that now. The Faraday cage. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And people have done, that's fucking perfect sense. I mean, Tim Murphy did that whole video on nothing but Val Kilmer and lizards, and he is the Lizard King, and the Jim Morrison, and the Mars. And don't forget that Val Kilmer in Mission to Mars, so it's the Jim Carrey, it's the Jim Carrey, because the Montauk is Mars.
Yeah. And the jump chair to Mars, right.
The jump chair to Mars.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Now, so the Faraday cage is to keep, you know, you're keeping a signal out. It's basically the tinfoil hat. You know, the tinfoil hat is the Faraday cage.
Oh. That's fucked up.
Right?
That's fucked up. Read all the signs. The tinfoil, River, not River Phoenix, but Leaf Phoenix. Did you guys know that Joaquin Phoenix's name is actually Leaf?
What?
His name, there's a movie that it has Joaquin Phoenix in it. It's about this Russian who washes up on the shore of the U.S. and befriends these fucking group of boys. And Joaquin Phoenix is credited as Leaf Phoenix in there. I think his original name is Leaf, just like his brother's name is River.
It is. That's true. Love me some JP. I love that movie. I'm Still Here. Genius.
But you see the relationship of the Joaquin Phoenix, the Johnny Cash, the Men in Black, as far as the Christ symbol, and his name being Leaf.
I love the resurrection of Johnny Cash when he crawled into a cave. You know that story, right?
Go for it.
Johnny Cash came to a certain point in his life. He said, fuck it. And I think he was pretty strung out on amphetamines and booze. But he walked into a cave and kept walking and walking. And he got to the furthest point and he laid down and he said, I'm going to die. Said, fuck this shit, it's over. And in that darkness and in that sort of end of the line, he reemerged and became the Man in Black.
And you know why he wears black, right?
Well, you know, it's a classic metaphor. I mean, if you talk
he's in mourning,
The Pythagoreans, their whole formula for transcendence is basically
oh, I
going
just,
into a cave There's a book by I'm not going to think of his name, but it details the whole Pythagorean sort of what's his name? I'll think of it. But it's like ancient mysteries, philosophy, and magic. And this ties into the whole notion of Mark LeClaire's description of the hypercube. And putting your brain into the hypercube so that you can gather enough perspective on the thing itself. And when you do that, you emerge as this man in black, you know, just like Johnny Cash, just like Joaquin Phoenix represents in I'm Still Here.
So he represents the man in black in multiple movies, you're saying?
It's a process, you know, it's a process of taking advantage of your situation and exploiting it in a way to gain enough perspective, because that's the thing about enlightenment. It's available to everyone. It's just more available to people with means. And Americans in this melting pot, I mean, we are the alchemical oven of history. I mean, I just don't know if people realize that this whole country is an alchemical oven. I mean, it was designed. We are the moon children. We are the country that went to the moon. We are the land of individuals that could have children where children were born, that they just assumed that man could go to the moon. That's a very major shift in consciousness, because that used to be a very a very specific and physical limitation to human reality. Is it still?
I mean, is that the whole point? Why are there so many connections between the moon landing and the WTC?
Well, that's a good point. I always say that the towers going down it's a refraction going backwards. It's the lightning that hits before the sound. I mean, it infects the past as greatly as it redefines the present moment, as much as it changes the future. I mean, that's the thing with these magical events. And I think Jake Kotz was the bravest one to put it out there. I mean, he started the dialogue, it seems like.
He opened the forum for sure.
No, okay. Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. I'm in another world here. I'm like listening to you, and I'm not because. All right. Wait. Jesus Christ. So. I don't know. You were saying something, and it went back to Batman in my mind, and I don't mean to be stuck on this fucking Batman thing. But I was thinking about, so Nicole Kidman is the red, and the whole Val Kilmer Batman has.
Oh shit.
Has Nicole Kidman as the love interest is the redhead, is your redhead. But,
oh shit.
But then. So that was Tom Cruise's wife. But then Katie Holmes, also Tom Cruise's wife, is in
TC.
The next Batman sequence.
His name is TC. TC is 23. And
Tom
see,
Cat.
Tomcat. Oh, yeah. Shit. But see, also like, oh, shit.
So why
see, the big W on the 20, the fucking pillar, like we were talking about the Oscorp or the fucking combination of the two pillars being the W. See, the KK and the W. It's like two K's splayed out and then put next to each other.
Yeah, because I was trying to find a picture of Nicole Kidman. I feel like I remember at the end of that movie, Nicole Kidman is like in a cage. Like they're going to drop her out of this cage or something. And I was thinking about the Faraday cage and all that sort of stuff.
Wow.
But why is Tom Cruise married to two of the Batman love interests?
Moulin Rouge. Rouge means red, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course.
I see where you're going with this.
And she's in the movie Australia, which is
Oz. Right. It even mentions Oz, like, specifically in that movie.
Yeah. But
that's fucked.
But you know, Jesus.
Well, see, you see the Cameron Diaz fucking connection in this also. She's the red fucking ogre in Shrek.
Is she?
Cameron Diaz does the voice for the princess Fiona, who's a redhead in Shrek. But it's Shrek.
Is she a true redhead?
It's a cartoon.
And Nicole Kidman's also in The Hours, like 127 Hours, which came out in 2002. Came out right after 9/11. Was The Hours.
Nicole Kidman, she's also in Eyes Wide Shut. See the.
Of course, yeah, yeah. But she's married. She's married to the doctor.
To Tom Cruise. Bill. She's fucking with Tom Cruise in Eyes Wide Shut.
Right.
And Homeboys, Mark LeClaire's theory about Eyes Wide Shut and 9/11 is fucking. I think it's. I like it.
I like it too.
Because Eyes Wide Shut is not possible unless 2001 has already happened. That's interesting.
I think that's a really interesting turn, yeah.
All right, Klaus, man, I'm tired, you guys. We've been doing this since 9. But Klaus, yes. Man, the whole thing that we deal with golems and shit like that, Klaus, and the Toy Story little dolls have the word truth on them, but it's in the form of Andy on their foot. Andy is DNA. Do you know what I mean?
I think so. Soul is DNA?
I don't know, but soul and DNA are completely intertwined. Somehow, the soul evolved DNA? Is that what we're dealing with?
You know, I think that the hard swallow of humanity is to accept the machine, and the hard swallow of humanity is to accept the animal. That these are polar realities in our construction. We are part animal, we are part machine, and our heart is tortured by our allegiance to one or the other. And you know, eventually you make peace with it. How do you make peace with it? Well, you know, choose your fucking path, man, and go forward. I don't know. But I will say this, for me personally, we are part machine, we are part animal. That is fact, that is not fiction, that is just structure, that is architecture. And to deny that is to wear blinders. I just don't see how you can't recognize that at this point.
Alan?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Tom Cruise's fucking wife, Nicole Kidman, she's the criminal psychiatrist for Gotham Police Department. And then is Dr.
Vicky Vale. Vicky Vale.
No, that's not Vicky Vale. That's the other one. That's the Tim Burton one. She's Chase Meridian, which is
interesting.
Chase Meridian. So fucking Katie Holmes is Rachel Dawes, Dawes, which is like Dawn. But check it out. It says Rachel enrolls in law school and gets an internship at the Gotham City District Attorney's Office during her first year. After Chill is murdered for testifying against mafia boss Carmine Falcone, Bruce reveals to Rachel that he intended to murder Chill himself and is angry that Falcone had killed him. Blah, 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 blah. Falcone. Fucking Falcon.
The guy with the big dick?
The guy with the big dick is Falcon. Yes. Yeah, fucking Falcon. So, and then Rachel dedicates her career to eliminating crime in Gotham City, in the process making enemies of Falcone and later Dr. Jonathan Crane, Arkham Asylum's corrupt chief psychiatrist.
Jesus, so, I gotta go to bed. Fuck
so this. Chase Meridian is the psychiatrist, and then, whatever. It's all just a fucking bumblefuck of whatever. I know this Tuesday, you guys are gonna have on
bumblefuck.
On 42 minutes, you're gonna have Lauren Coleman copycat.
Really?
Right?
Yes. I don't know how that happened. That is completely synchronistic because I know for a fact Doug asked him before the shooting actually happened. So it's just serendipitous, and I think that it is indicative of what 2012 has become. It's just it's different. It's more symbolic than I fucking imagined it would be. And it's just weird because it's Revelations. It's just like. But it's all through pop. I don't know, man. It's fucking nuts.
Or it's all through anything. For me, it's like, you know, like you guys at the Sinkhole focus on pop. Klaus is going to focus on, you know, James Joyce. You know, whatever you draw your attention to, it's like what we're doing is, you know, you can find the fingerprint of the universe in anything.
Right.
So if you want, whatever you want to put your focus on, you're going to see it. So at this point, it really doesn't matter what you focus on, but I think everyone's kind of seeing it. And unfortunately, I think some people might be fucking with their heads a little bit. And hell, we might be among that crowd, but I don't think so. I think we're kind of got a gauge on this, that this is how it's playing out. It's like everyone's, it's like all this shit is fucking intertwined. And as this speeds up, if that's what it's doing, which it certainly feels that fucking way.
Right.
Then yeah, I think that people are gonna realize, oh my god, this shit is all
sink or swim, sink or drown.
It's all
sink
one
or swim. It's sink or drown, man.
Sink or drown. Because yeah.
So a nihilist thinks that it's just it's death or death. No, you know it's a twist, James Joycean style.
That's right.
Wow. All right. Well, look, gentlemen, thank you for the evening. I appreciate it thoroughly.
I enjoyed this immensely. This is fantastic.
Yeah, it was. I can't wait to listen to it.
I'm so glad we got to do it.
I'm never going to listen to this.
Damn.
Once is more than enough for me.
Let it live in legend, man.
All right. Well, peace, brothers. Late.
So,
have a great night, man.
Bye. Later.